Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free, select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams, one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
All right, everyone. Welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined this week by my friend Pat Corain, giving Andrew Barron the week off because he is Pacific time and I wake up super early Central time. So like, honestly, like half of my day's work is done by the time Andrew wakes up. So I am joined by my good friend, Patrick Corain, bringing him back on the podcast that he basically co-hosted this offseason. always good to have Pat on the show. I realized this the other day because I DM'd you and Pete. I was like, we talked every day during the offseason about something, and then it gets to be the season and we just all go our separate ways.
I know, dude. And there was like a period around like week 7 or 8 or something where I was like feeling pretty bummed out. So it's like, I haven't like talked to Davis. I haven't like talked to, it's just, you kind of get in your own little bubble of like your routine. And I feel like over the last maybe 3-4 weeks, you had me on the take cast and like, we've kind of like the schedules hasn't lightened up exactly, but
it's just, you're in such a good rhythm that you can do some other stuff. That yes. That like you've got the okay, I do my podcast here, I go on TV now, I do my waivers now, and it's just like a little bit easier to, but like that first like 6 weeks of the season, it just feels like every day it's like, I don't know how I'm gonna get all this crap done. Yeah
because it is a shock to the system from like the off season where you're quite busy, but it's almost, you know, a lot of it's fun, a lot of it's kind of the, you know.
Yeah, I mean drafting is the best part. Everyone knows that is the best. So this is the DFS game by game preview show. And I already know from doing the projections, I go through and do the first round of projections. This is going to be a slate that swings big time based on injuries. So we have the JD McKissick stuff for the Washington football team. You know, Seattle has a 25 point team total. We don't really know who's going to be playing running back for them. You know, we don't know if McNichols is going to be back for the Titans. Like there's just is a ton of stuff. So this is always, you know, more of a first look show. So I guess we can go ahead and get into it with the first game, the Kansas City Chiefs at home to the Las Vegas Raiders. And apparently the market is really buying the Chiefs defense because the Raiders have a team total of 19.5. This is actually another one that's going to be impacted by injuries. So Kenyon Drake broke his ankle, but Jalen Richard was not active last week because he is on the COVID list. I don't have him projected in right now. So I think they would have like Trey Regis active as their third running back or whatever. But Jacobs would actually probably be a smash against the Chiefs if Richard is not able to be activated, because I don't think they're going to play Peyton Barber on passing downs.
Yeah, why would you? Peyton Barber is a two-down grinder. You know, I think it makes a ton of sense to use Jacobs in the receiving game, something that we've been assuming they would do since they drafted him.
Since they drafted him.
Yeah. And, you know, some of that weirdness is kind of in the rearview mirror because it was related to John Gruden, I assume. And we've already seen Jacobs get used.
He's trended up in targets here with the new coaching staff. Yeah,
exactly. So reasonable to expect that he would have like a legit three down role if Richard's not activated. And Jacobs is like, I don't think he's a great running back, but he's like a very solid running back.
I've always thought he's pretty decent. He just has like a gross role. It's like the team treated him like he was Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, I kind of like, I compare him a little bit to James Conner in the walkthrough last week, which I don't know. It feels like maybe at this point it's like a like a bad comparison or something, but Connor was quite effective as a young player. And, you know, just one of these guys who's like fairly elusive. He's not going to give you like a ton of breakaway stuff, but he's a competent receiver. And in a big role, I think, you know, that's plenty.
Yeah, no doubt. So on the Chiefs side of the ball, I mean, honestly, it's very discouraging. They are a low volume run for not, I guess they're not a run first team. Like they still skew the right way in terms of run pass, but they are, you know, they're controlling the ball. They're keeping everything in front of the defense. And, you know, I made this note the other day that in the old Chiefs offense, this new role that Byron Pringle has found, he would have been like a super hot waiver wire pickup as clearly the number two wide receiver, you know, running a ton of routes. I think he got 72% of the snaps in that Denver Broncos game, but it just doesn't matter because all else things being equal, Andy Reid is not he's not trying to go out and score 40 points. I know that Mahomes, he had 405 the last time they scored 41 points against the Raiders the last time they played. But I don't think that any of these Chiefs guys are actually going to be that popular. I mean, I only have Tyreek for like 19 points because of how their offense has skewed, which is it's just bizarre.
And the Raiders are a run funnel too. So,
yeah,
you know, not that the Chiefs are going to shift heavily to the run because they are the Chiefs, but you could see them more tilted to the run than they usually are. Which I think makes options like Pringle a lot less interesting. Like, you know, even if they tilt to the run, Hill can get there. Obviously Kelsey can get there, but
yeah, I wonder if Hill is actually like a really strong term. I mean, we have him projected to be super owned, but I guess it just kind of depends on and maybe I'll tweak the projections a little bit more, but I mean, Mahomes only like 7% against the Raiders. I mean, he's sort of interesting, but like, I don't know. It's just like the Chiefs are on a slate and it's like, no one cares because they're boring now, you know?
Yeah. And Edwards-Helaire isn't like an exciting option. There's some split there with the backfield. So
do you have any thoughts on Foster Moreau? He got bumped up to 4,000, but I mean, the role was there. I mean, he ran all the routes. He was out there like 85%. I mean, he wasn't out there for 100% of the snaps, but I mean, he did almost score a touchdown too. He had a red zone target, and had he like hopped over the safety on his long reception, he would have scored.
He ran a route on 62% of dropbacks, which isn't great.
Yeah.
And the other thing with him, so his ADOT was actually fairly high last week.
Well,
very high, 19.3 ADOT last week. But prior to that, he's had like an ADOT that's more like, you know, 5-6. And so I never really bought that he was like a true one-for-one for Darren Waller, even in a role sense, because I think he's like more kind of like a slot receiver playing.
He's Jason Witten.
Yeah, it's Jason Witten. Where Waller's like, you know, like an alpha wide receiver at tight end. He gets downfield. He's actually like driving the offense in a way that Moreau, I don't think, ever really had a chance of doing. So, you know, is that like a non-really chalky option? I suppose it's fine, but the team total is definitely scary. And like, how much are you buying the Chiefs defense?
Not at all. I think it's incredibly smoke and mirrors. I just think it's more about what the offense not giving them short fields, because the turnovers have stopped too. The other teams aren't getting extra possessions. I mean, the real truth is that the defense was not that bad to begin with. Like they were being put in a bunch of impossible situations. They were having to face these long drives. The offense was like turning the ball over very quickly in succession. I've seen smart people make this point about the Titans game that, you know, basically it was like one of the most random games you're ever going to see, that the offense would gain, they would gain 60 yards in like 45 seconds of game clock. And then they would turn the ball over, and then Derrick Henry would just start, you know, and that's like the worst situation to be against Derrick Henry is having a tough defense. All right, so let's move to Dallas against Washington. Amari Cooper played only 34% of the snaps in his last game. I have him projected to come back and get a full role here, though I think that this I mean, Gallup is just so good, right? And I think that that's something that has become clear over the last couple of weeks of the season, is that Gallup's presence on the field, I don't think he impacts CeeDee's ceiling at all, but I do think he impacts how many targets we can expect Amari Cooper to get. Like, you know, CeeDee is 7,200, Cooper is 5,900, and Gallup is 5,500, and neither of them look like great values at all, really.
Yeah, I agree with you about CeeDee's ceiling, because I think in some ways his ceiling is maybe even a little higher with,
because he gets more Gallup slot snaps. Back.
Exactly. He gets more. And as long as he's going to be, you know, on the field and in two wide receiver sets, then I don't really care about, you know, in fact, I actually like that he's in the slot in three wide receiver sets. And so it kind of offsets the additional kind of target competition, I think, at least in terms of a ceiling. Maybe his median comes down a bit, but yeah, I mean, Cooper and Gallup kind of look set to cannibalize each other.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I just am not interested in Ezekiel Elliott. I'm really not. I mean, the role is like, so whatever, he's going to get his short yardage touchdowns, but because he is so non-explosive at this point, his upside would be tied to getting like a Jonathan Taylor-esque workload, but that's not happening because there's been a, like, it's like a 60-40 timeshare between Zeke and Pollard. Now Zeke does still get all the high value touches in the green zone, but I just don't think he can get 30 really hardly at all the way they're playing now.
Yeah. And this matchup is pretty interesting where, like, if you want to pick one of Gallup and Cooper, then go CeeDee. I mean, Prescott is in a pretty good spot here. His accuracy this year has been better than his efficiency, like to the point where we'd now probably expect like a little bit of positive regression in his efficiency. And obviously Washington's a pass funnel. They've been a little bit better recently, but I don't think enough to kind of shake things up dramatically. And then the other thing that's interesting about Dallas, right? They opened the season against the Buccaneers with a 21% pass rate over expected. Yep. And then, like, it turns out, right, it's week one. So they set the trend that the Buccaneers are going to be this big pass funnel. I think correctly identifying something about the Buccaneers defense, then, like, just absolutely, you know,
running the ball.
Passing the ball. Just passing the ball.
Oh, nonstop. Yeah. In that game.
Yeah. And doing it in a way where we thought, oh, man, they're just going to pass all the time. Then the following week, they get the Chargers. And they have a minus 11% pass rate over expected, going super run heavy. So now we're all confused, but they identified those are the clearest two matchups, as it turns out, in the league, where the Chargers are the biggest run funnel and the Buccaneers are the biggest pass funnel. They identify them right out of the gate of the season and attack them heavily, you know, where those defenses are weak. It would make sense to me that they do attack Washington pretty heavily through the air this week. They haven't played Washington yet, so we don't have a data point on that. And so I kind of like Dak, you know, Dak stacks, as opposed to trying to play the backfield here.
Yeah. And then on the Washington side of the ball, I'm not really interested in McLaurin other than as a bring back in Dallas stacks, if you did want to do that. What are your thoughts on Gibson on DraftKings at 6,000, if McKissick does play? Like, do we think that the cat is out of the bag and there's no putting it back in? Obviously that's my hope. And I mean, even before McKissick got hurt, he did score the two touchdowns against Seattle, but Gibson had basically up to that point, like, the biggest workload of his career was in that game. So I think either way, Gibson is still probably a really strong play.
Yeah. I guess it comes down to like how many people are playing him. If, because I mean, he won't be super popular, but the Dallas has a good defense, so I don't love it if McKissick is back. You just, you know, they're going to play McKissick a fair amount, and we know exactly what role he's going to be in. He's going to be catching passes, and that's going to hurt Gibson. It just is,
right?
And it's not a great matchup as is. So, you know, the touchdown equity that you're getting with Gibson isn't great. So I'm a little bit skittish, but certainly, you know, it probably comes with very low ownership.
Yeah. And then if Ricky Seals-Jones is not able to play, I mean, John Bates is just going to be Logan Thomas or whatever. Like he came in, he got four targets after Logan Thomas got hurt. Actually, he got a target even before Logan Thomas did last week. For our bros still grinding the FFPC main event, John Bates is out there. And then, so the other question would be, is if Ricky Seals-Jones does play in this game, does one of them get that super valuable role where they're just out there every snap, or do we think they split it?
I think one of them gets a super valuable role.
Yeah.
I think it would be
Ricky Seals-Jones. I think it would be. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the guy who plays ahead is going to play all the snaps, because we've seen that. Like, that's just what they do.
That's just what they do.
Yeah, yeah. They don't rotate. So,
yeah.
And I mean, I'm in on this role. Like,
every guy who's had it, the worst game that any Bates, RSJ, Logan Thomas, their worst game was 3 for 30. And that was Bates in his start. He got 3 for 30 on like 98% of the snaps or something. Yeah. So it's just a really good role. All right. Seattle at Houston. I mean, I'm not playing any of the running backs. Like, I don't care between, you know, maybe you could talk me into Penny as a dart, but I think even then Peterson is still going to get the goal line stuff. What I am more interested in is $6,700 Tyler Lockett, $6,500 DK Metcalf. I feel like Russ kind of showed me enough. I don't think Russ is back, but he did kind of show me enough last week that I think these guys are like in the conversation again.
Yeah. So Russ, there's a metric on Ben Baldwin's site that I use, rbsdm.com. He's got completion percentage over expected up there. And going back to like when Russ entered the league through 2020, is the most accurate quarterback by completion percentage over expected. It's just like, that's a superpower beyond the mobility. Just, he's so accurate.
So accurate.
And his accuracy had cratered following his return from injury this year. He was second in CPOE prior to injury this year, and then just abysmal when he came back from the finger injury, which would make sense. Like, his finger was literally.
Yeah, that's logical.
Yeah. It was back up last week. And so I'm on the same page as you, where he showed me enough. He flashed the accuracy again. If the accuracy is back, he's Russ. Like, he's still Russ in this offense that's kind of cratering, and Pete Carroll is going to limit him as much as he can. But I like one of Lockett or Metcalf this week. I don't think I'm in on Russ stacks.
Yeah, same.
I guess you could single stack it, but
well, no, especially because the Texans are not going to are not going to force them. You know, the Texans with Davis Mills. I mean, I'm not wasting our time talking about any Texans players. And the running back situation is super toxic as well. We honestly, another very similar game, the Jacksonville Jaguars going up against the Tennessee Titans. I think McNichols is going to be back this week. So what do you see happening with Hilliard? You know, my assumption has been McNichols is going to get that job back when he comes back. Like, I don't think that they'll do the three-way split. I think that Hilliard will go back to being a special teamer. Because remember, Hilliard was on the team already. He was a practice squatter when the original injury happened, and they didn't even call him up. They signed Peterson instead.
Yeah, I think that McNichols will also have a role. But I wonder if, you know, Hilliard eats into Deontay Foreman's role a bit. I mean, he did have 35% of the backfield attempts and led in snaps in week 12. So, you know, it makes me wonder, like, is Foreman's role completely safe? Is it still a three-way
backfield? I think Foreman's role is completely safe. I think they view Foreman as their Derrick Henry facsimile, right? Big guy, very upright runner, very north to south. Like, he's not.
Yeah,
he's not running a ton of routes. Like, so if I was going to play one of them, and I don't even have, I actually have Hilliard for a little bit more points this week. One, because it's the Jaguars, which is the only reason this conversation is even happening. And two, they still don't have any healthy wide receivers unless Julio comes back to play this week. I mean, some guy by the name of Cody Hollister, who I don't know who that is, was their second leading route runner against the Patriots and actually got four targets. And he's the stone man.
Related to Jacob Hollister?
Probably. Honestly, probably they are. I'll Google it. Maybe Nick Westbrook, Akine, he's 4,500. I mean, it is the Jaguars, right? Like it is the Jaguars.
It's kind of a consideration, I think, because it is the Jaguars. And one, you know, the thing with the Titans is that Tannehill's play action rate has been way down since he lost Derrick Henry, and his efficiency has been way down. He was fifth in EPA per play with Derrick Henry in the lineup. He's fallen way, way down since then, down to 23rd. So his accuracy's dropped since Henry's out of the lineup. And so to some extent, I think it's kind of like on Tannehill, his slump.
Yeah.
Post Henry, but their play action rate has dropped from 12th. Tannehill was 12th in play action rate. He's now 24th. In the weeks without Henry. So that, I think, we know that this is the way that Tannehill's effective is on those play action. You know, there's wide receiver injuries. There's his own accuracy to deal with. It's not like just clear cut. This is causing everything. But the fact that we're talking about this backfield because of the matchup, I also think helps the passing in because they're going to be able to get things going a little bit on the ground. They're going to be kind of the classic Titans to some extent, just because the Jacksonville Jaguars defense is so bad. That does make like a Westbrook Akine punt at least like interesting.
Yeah. I think the only Jaguar who is interesting at all is O'Shaughnessy. He's 2,900. He played 86% of the snaps last week. Now he did give up more snaps to Luke Farrell and Chris Manhertz than Dan Arnold was giving, but he still led the team in targets. He's 2,900. He'll be very popular this week. Most people will probably play him in cash, but I am not talking about James Robinson, and we can just avoid bringing up the fact that Laquan Treadwell leads the Jaguars in snaps over the last 3 weeks, because that is, it's just really depressing. And also, by the way, Cody Hollister and Jacob Hollister, twin brothers. So there you go.
Wow. All right.
Twin brothers. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. You learn. We learn lots of interesting nuggets on this show.
Yeah, I'd rather play John Bates than James O'Shaughnessy.
You're right. All right. Honestly, a game again. No one I want to play in Baltimore, or Cleveland. I mean, maybe Lamar, like literally unstacked. Like I think unstacked Lamar or with Mark Andrews, but Lamar has not even been running as much over his most recent sample. So 8 for 55. I guess he did run a bunch against Cleveland when we saw them play 2 weeks ago, but that was like one of the worst games of Lamar's career. And the Browns just want to play super ugly right now because they have no faith or like they just do not believe in Baker Mayfield. Although the one situation I could see being interesting in this game is if Kareem Hunt does not play, because the beat writers were saying that he got banged up. He got banged up at the end of that Baltimore game. Then Cleveland went on their bye. But I searched on NBC Sports Edge yesterday and did not see a blurb updating Kareem Hunt's status. So I don't know if he's healthy or not.
Well, I'm going to be doing the news after we finish this pod, so I'll take a look and see if I could find anything on Hunt.
But I mean, even if Hunt doesn't play, are you really that interested in Nick Chubb at 7,600 in the this offense is so bad. Like this honestly, the Browns are at a Jaguars Texans level of offensive efficiency over the last month of the season. Like it's really bad. They have gained on offense 262 yards against the Ravens, 349, but it was the Lions, and 217 against the Patriots. I mean, it's just really bad.
It is really bad. And the way you beat the Ravens is through deep passes. It's like,
and they have no corners. Well. Marlon Humphrey is banged up now too.
Yeah. But they're like pretty good against the run, the Ravens. So it's just not a great matchup for the Browns or like anyone you'd want to play on the Browns. I mean, like I do like small field GPPs. So
same. Like, yeah. Like I do like
really, but that's the kind
if,
of,
if I was,
I think you'd,
if I was doing 150, I would get to 5% DPJ, I think, because he can do it on three plays. I mean, he can get the bonus and a touchdown on three plays.
Exactly. I think that's probably the only way I'd sprinkle in like any Browns, to be honest. Yeah.
All right. Now, finally, a game that's at least interesting on one side, the New Orleans Saints playing at the Jets. And the reason why it's interesting is, one, I expect Alvin Kamara to be back this week. And two, Taysom Hill is priced at $5,600 on DraftKings. And I think he is just a stone cold jam. If we assume the play calling is going to be the way that it was last week, but he suffered this mallet finger injury. And I don't know what that is. I mean, they could bench him. They could go back to Simeon here, or they could do both of them, or whatever. Like, Taysom Hill is already a sketchy proposition as a passing quarterback to begin with. But when you add in a finger injury that just turned Russell Wilson from the most accurate quarterback of like all time into a guy who couldn't score, who'd they get shut out against? I don't even remember. They got shut out against somebody. Like, Taysom Hill playing with that same injury does not inspire confidence in me.
No, it doesn't. And the other thing with the Jets, I mean, the way you beat the Jets is by playing them. So it's right. Not like you can only beat them one way. You beat them however you want. But they're very susceptible to deep passes. And Simeon has been absolutely awful this year, but he actually has been willing to throw deep. So part of me wonders, like, if there's any way to get away from some kind of quarterback split, because if you're game planning, like, even if Hill was healthy, you'd be kind of tempted, if you're Sean Payton, to have Simeon, you know, maybe in there a little bit just to try to challenge the defense.
I mean, we've always said this, right? The offensive coordinator or play caller who we said would actually do a two quarterback system. We talked about this in the preseason, you and I, about Jameis and Taysom. Like, it would actually make sense because they have totally divergent skill sets. Taysom is great in short yardage, great in the red zone. Jameis not as good as in those spots because he loves to take risks.
Right.
And I mean, Simeon is just like dime store deep throwing quarterback or whatever. Like, he's really bad.
Yeah, and he's on sale today.
Yeah,
he's so bad.
He sure is. but I do think this is a question that people are going to have to ask themselves for stuff this week, because Taysom, in every optimizer system you use, Taysom is going to be the quarterback that they want you to use, for no doubt.
Yeah, and Leone's talked about this, like this input volatility type of stuff, where it's like the projections that you're using. Everyone's going to have to make a decision on Hill. You know, and they're probably going to tamp down his attempts a little bit, and his efficiency maybe a little bit, but it's like, ultimately,
I don't even have him for a crazy amount of rushing. I have him for 20% of the rushes, Kamara for 50, and Mark Ingram for 25%.
Yeah. Yeah. But because of the matchup, like, unless you basically take a stand that no one will take, and no one really should take, that he's just like going to play like 50% of the quarterback snaps or something, then he's going to project awesome. But there is risk of that. So I don't know. I'll obviously just be kind of monitoring and make a decision. But I had a ton of Gardner Minshew last week, so I'm very open to the idea.
I won't play Taysom in tournaments just because I always stack. Like, I always say on these shows, like, oh yeah, you can play this guy naked, but I never really do it. So I probably won't play Taysom, especially because I think he probably will be the most owned quarterback. But I will be playing Alvin Kamara at 7,900. I mean, that is just a gift of a price, even if Taysom doesn't throw to the running backs as much, which he doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, the touchdown equity here, you know, he's kind of like we just saw Miles Sanders get there against the Jets, and it's like a similar thing.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you break up big plays and score touchdowns and stuff.
All right, Atlanta against Carolina. This is our first slate trying to deal with, you know, what the Ameer Abdullah Chuba Hubbard backfield is going to be look like. I have Abdullah for more points. He's 4,800 because I have him expected to play the passing downs, and it is the Falcons. But I think the fact that this is a clear 50-50 where both of the running backs are losing massive amounts of touchdown equity to the quarterback, it makes both of them pretty thin. I mean, it's not going to surprise me if one of them does have a good game. Like, if we show up on Sunday afternoon and, you know, one of them racks up like 21 DK points, I won't be that surprised. Cause again, so much of the system is built around getting the running back the ball, cause they thought they were going to have Christian McCaffrey, and a two-way split is like passable, But also the other issue is neither of these guys are that good. So that's like a significant impediment, you know?
I like Hubbard here more than I wouldn't be looking to play either of these guys, but like, yeah, if I had to spot start one or something, I'd play Hubbard just because they just fired Joe Brady for passing too much. Or for not running a ton is really what it was. And Hubbard is the guy for that. So, you know, if the offense is basically just going to be like a bunch of zone read stuff with Newton, it's probably Hubbard who benefits. But
I mean, if they really do, if they run 35 times in this game, Hubbard can have a great game. Yeah, I think that's true.
But yeah, but I don't know. It's also like a little thin. I don't think I'm going to get there on it.
They finally have increased the price on Patterson a little bit, who played a little bit less at running back and a little bit more at wide receiver last week. I mean, he still got his touches as a running back, but he again gave up some more. He gave up more work to Mike Davis. Mike Davis got back up to like an 11% target share last week. The interesting question is, and I can't believe we're having this discussion because of how much we hated this guy in the preseason, but Russell Gage.
He's a special athlete, Davis.
He sure is. He's got like a 24% target share in the last couple of weeks. And it's like, it's the most dime store Julian Edelman impression ever. He adds nothing after the catch. He is not athletic, but I mean, the offense does need to throw to someone. And for whatever reason, it's not Kyle Pitts, which is a mystery that the Kyle Pitts thing is just so bizarre to me. Like, how can we not get this guy the ball more?
It is bizarre, and it's also bizarre because it's like not happening in the red zone. Like, he's just not getting any end zone, red zone targets, etc. And it's also this franchise that has a history of not throwing to Julio Jones for, you know, in the end zone. So it's like, is there just like whatever your best player is, you don't involve in the touchdown scoring areas? It's very strange. I'm not really in on Gage. I mean, he's 5,700 on DraftKings. Like, I feel like we're going to be able to find better options for the price. This is a good defense they're up against. This is probably a Panthers team that's going to be very run heavy. Like, I very much buy that. You can't fire Joe Brady and then not be super run heavy the following week, right? So they had the bye week to put in, you know, whatever crazy new run heavy game plan they want to do. So it's probably going to be a slow game. Probably not going to be a ton of volume. I don't think I'm in really on anyone in the passing game. Patterson's
it's not even in the dome. This one is at Carolina. Maybe if it was in the dome, I'd be a little bit more interested, but yeah.
Yeah. I don't love the options here.
Okay. Detroit versus Denver. Two big questions, actually three. One, do we buy Amon-Ra St. Brown 24% target share? Two, do we think that Jamal Williams 47% snap share is real, or was that just a weird thing in the game and he's going to be more back to like what DeAndre Swift was playing? And then three, can the Broncos put the genie back in the bottle with Javonte Williams after that game against the Chiefs? Because Melvin Gordon should be back this week. And do they basically go back and do a 50-50 split, or is Javonte, you know, going to be 70-30 with Melvin Gordon here?
On the Amon-Ra stuff, I'm kind of in. He ran around 90% of dropbacks. We know, like, there was a big offseason narrative that, you know, Amon-Ra was going very high in dynasty rookie drafts because it's like Jared Goff's slot receiver. And I was very out on that because it's like, well, it's also like Jared Goff might not be there after this year. And Amon-Ra St. Brown's a fourth round pick. He might not be very good.
Make the team.
Yeah. But he's here now, and, you know, I think there is an opportunity down the stretch here to provide some fantasy value. And Goff was looking for
his price week. Did get all the way hiked up. He's $5,000 on DraftKings, so if you believe it, you got to pay for it.
Yeah, which you don't love. But yeah, I'm kind of in at least somewhat on him. The Jamal Williams stuff I also buy. I mean, there's no reason – like.
Do you know about Igwebuke?
He was a converted safety.
Yeah. Never played running back until he got to the NFL.
Well, because so one of the things I was covering the game where he scored his first touchdown. And so that means I was putting up the blurbs on the site for all the relevant players. And you have to make a decision about who gets like a sports headline, which means you tweet it out, it shows up on the page. But you sometimes have blurbs that like are in the feed, but we don't like flag them as headlines. So I flagged Igwebuke's touchdown as like a headline, which I was told is like far below the headline status,
far
but
below.
It was his first career touchdown. So I remember looking him up and be like, hey, this guy's like 27, never scored a touchdown. Like
probably his first competitive football touchdown ever. Probably didn't score one in college. Let's look and see if he scored one. Nope, no touchdowns in college. He did have one reception at Northwestern. Good all for right, him.
Well, I'm glad I headlined it then.
Yeah. I think that was a deserved headline. Yeah. What about Javonte and Melvin? What do you think?
I mean, you know, I want to say like, it's Javonte all the way, and you know, Melvin, but I think they knew what they had weeks ago in Javonte.
Sure. You know? Yeah. It's not a surprise.
Yeah. So I would imagine that we see like probably a 60-40 split in favor of Javonte, but I don't think we'll get to 70, and I wouldn't rule out Melvin leading in snaps. Like as stupid as that would be,
yeah.
You just can't rule it out.
No, I think you're right. I do. I think you're right. I think there's enough meat on the bone and Javonte will be efficient enough that I think that you can justify playing him even at 14-15% owned, but it's certainly much thinner than it was last week. Yeah.
I mean, I played him in week 12 and he got there, you know, and he actually was not, you know, cause that was the post bye week thing. And you thought maybe he was going to be the lead back and he wasn't, it was the same split, but he's good enough to where he can still get there. I just wouldn't count on that.
Yeah. I mean, wow. There just are not really that many great games this week. Last week was so awesome. And there were so many good plays and it's far. I guess
no, I Judy, feel like I keep saying like, man, I'm not interested.
Right. Like, yeah. Judy, I could see Judy being playable here. I mean, he's been terrible, but he is out there a ton. And I don't know. It is the Lions. That's all I got on him, really.
And the Lions actually have been much more beatable through the air. They've started to become like, they're not a good defense by any means, but they've kind of got it together a little bit in recent weeks. And their run defense is like somewhat respectable now, where their pass
which
defense
would,
is still
which
ex-
would,
extremely beatable.
That would make sense given like their coach, right? Because he's like, you got to stop, you got to stop the run, you know?
Right.
Like we can't be giving up 5 yards per carry. Like that would totally make sense.
Right. Meanwhile, Justin Jefferson is just absolutely exploding.
Just dominating them. Yeah. All right, we have the Chargers playing at home to probably Jake Fromm with the New York Giants. You know, maybe if Kadarius Toney is able to get back this week, he is 5,100. I mean, look, Freddie Kitchens calling the plays, right? I don't know. It's kind of the stuff he used to do with Jarvis Landry, where the plan would just be get this guy the ball 12 times game. I could. And Fromm is terrible, but I could see a little bit of Tony. Zero interest in Barkley. It's so bad. You know, for Barkley to bury you. I mean, he hasn't even gotten, you know, 20 touches since coming back from injury. The offense sucks. It's just no good. But the Chargers are far more interesting. They have one of the highest team totals of the slate. We got Herbert, who's playing incredible, finally throwing the ball down the field. We have Eckler, you know, continuing to just have goal line work, which is crazy for Austin Eckler, considering he never really has gotten it before. And Mike Williams showed some signs of life last week, 100 yards for the first time since like week 4, I think, or something like that. And then Keenan is just full Keenan, you know, 28% target share. Finally scoring some touchdowns, scored the 2 touchdowns last week. I mean, I do. These guys are all going to be very popular, I think.
Well, isn't Keenan banged up right now?
He's on the COVID list, but he's vaccinated.
Oh, that's what it is.
So,
right.
So he can. Okay. So he has a chance to play. Now, if Keenan doesn't play, are we interested in any of, you know, Cook, Guyton, Palmer? Guyton has flipped Palmer. He played 50% of the snaps last week, which is about as much as a third wide receiver on the Chargers can play because they play 4 tight ends. They dead ass play 4 tight ends. It's absurd.
So, yeah. I actually would be more interested in Palmer, even though, you know, to your point, it was Guyton last week, but I just have the Tyron Johnson stuff in my head from last year where,
I mean, he's just as an all-time wind sprinter.
Yeah, Guyton is just, yeah, he's like the full Chris Hogan. Like he just runs deep routes. He's Demir Byrd, you know. He's on the outside. He's challenging the defense deep. He's fast. He's helping other people get open because you do have to account for him. Like if you just don't cover him, like he can score a touchdown. But outside of that, like he's not going to do anything. So I'd much rather take my chance on Palmer. You know, they just drafted him third round. He's flashed. He's got a little
bit more size. I don't know. I'm very biased against him from Dynasty season.
I mean, flash is probably a strong word, but like he's I've seen him out there and been like, oh, he looks like an NFL player. You know, like, he's not. Like,
I can't. Bum. I can't tell him and Guyton apart watching them. I mean, he looks
a little big to me, Josh Palmer, like bigger than I thought he'd look.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's 6'2", 210. That's big for a wide receiver in today's NFL.
Yeah, so like some of the over the middle stuff, some of the, you know, what's opening up, I think is probably a better fit for Guyton. For Palmer.
If Palmer comes in and plays that Keenan role, he's like an absolute jam because he is he's 3,000. And if we think he plays in the slot with no Keenan, I could be talked into Palmer, I think.
I don't know what the chances of that are, and they're probably not very high, but I think the chances of Guyton doing that are like basically zero.
Basically zero. Yeah, it's probably more likely that Cook does it actually.
Yeah.
Which is, buddy, he's slow, man. He's very, Jared Cook is very slow at this stage in his career.
No, it is. Sad. All right. Remember when he was like the most like athletic guy ever?
I remember when Jared Cook was Donald Parham. I do. I'm old enough in fantasy football to remember that. All right. This will be the number one far and away most stacked game. All the pieces here, Buffalo at Tampa Bay in the dome. Steph Diggs is 8,100. Cole Beasley is 5,000. Manny Sanders is 4,900. Gabriel Davis scored the touchdown last week, but he only ran 10 routes. We got Dawson Knox at 5,000. And then on the Tampa Bay side, we got Lenny at 7,400. Super popular, will be a huge jam. Chris Godwin at 7,100. People will play him. People will play less of Evans at 6,600 and Gronk at 6,000, which I actually think the sticker shock of that Gronk price will keep him from being like real popular. He'll be like 8-9%, but this is, we finally got to the game that everyone is going to want to use players from.
Yeah. And I guess this does feel like one of those classic spots where I'll like let everyone pick how they want to play it and then come in and scoop the leftovers at low ownership. And, you know,
I mean, it's always Mike Evans. Mike Evans is always that guy for the Buccaneers. Yeah.
Yeah. It is always Mike Evans. And I wonder, like, are people going to play this primarily from the Brady side or the Josh Allen side?
You know, it's just hard. It's probably the Brady side because I think that people will have a little bit of that Monday night game in their head, which is stupid because no one should take anything from that game probably. Cause it was one of the most all time bizarre games. I mean, people will play both sides. I think, I mean, we have Brady. Yeah. People will play Brady and people will play a little bit more Josh Allen and these owners. I'm looking at our ownerships right now and they're wrong. They're way too low. But yeah, people and Brady is Josh Allen is 7,800 and Brady is full priced at 7,600.
It is tough to justify Brady when you can get to Allen for
200 more. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty wild. But you know, Brady, like outside of the dig stuff, is more stackable.
And the pass rate over expectation too. I mean, they like are number one in the NFL in pass rate over expectation and number one in the NFL in pass rate over expectation in the red zone. Like all they want to do is get Brady touchdowns.
Yeah. Although I do wonder if maybe the, like you could do an Allen single stack with a Fournette bring back. That will probably be pretty popular, right?
You know, people don't do the bring backs with a running back that often, I don't think. Maybe that's not true. But I mean, Josh, Dawson Knox, Steph Diggs, and Mike Evans. I mean, there you go. That's a great way to approach this game that will not be like super popular or super heavy duped.
And it does feel, I mean, we just spent the whole slate going gross, gross, gross. So there's probably like, it's going to be difficult to get away from this game, you know, even as like a exactly. turning player.
Yeah. Like you are going to have to talk yourself. You're going to have to talk yourself into someone else if you don't want to take pieces from this game. And I think one of the games people are going to talk themselves into is San Francisco at Cincinnati. This one's a total of 49. Eli Mitchell may or may not play. He's in the concussion protocol. Jeff Wilson Jr. suffered a knee injury. And I think that the team learned all they needed to learn about Jeff Wilson Jr. 3 weeks ago when he subbed in for Eli Mitchell, which is that he's just got no juice left. He had, 21 touches for 61 yards in that game. So I think Hasty would get a majority of the running back work here if Eli Mitchell is not able to come back from the concussion protocol.
And Hasty wasn't active when Wilson got his
correct ball. He had a high ankle sprain. Yeah,
I agree. And Hasty's also gotten work on receiving downs. So it's pretty, he feels like he's got a pretty strong path to, you know, maybe he doesn't get like 100% of the snaps or anything, but let's say maybe he doesn't get 80% of the snaps, but he's still going to get a lot of the high value snaps.
Are we expecting Debo back this week?
I'm a little bit pessimistic. Where are you at?
No, I think so. I don't have him in the projections right now. And I have Ayuk for 24% snap share, 15 points. And I have Kittle for 29% snap share, 17 points. Your stack here, super easy. Burrow, T, bring it back with Ayuk or Kittle or both of them. And just hope that the absence of Eli Mitchell means that they will need to throw a little bit more, which happened, I believe. Right? I think that game where Eli Mitchell missed, who is it again? Was that one against the Jaguars? Yes. Yeah. And Jimmy had, I mean, so they barely had to throw, but he did have two passing touchdowns in that game. And Debo had a rushing touchdown, which would not obviously is not going to happen. I can see this game being stackable. I mean, we're finally seeing T like be an alpha. He actually in games they played together, he has more targets and has a larger target share than Ja'Marr Chase, which is not how I saw this season going after T started out so slow.
Well, but Ja'Marr Chase has like a very deep ADOT. So yeah. The target share stuff is a little misleading in that regard, where they have a very similar, both have a very high value role in the offense. And Chase, yes. I mean, I'm sure everyone saw the drop last week that Ja'Marr Chase had.
Oh, it was so bad.
Gutting. Yeah. So, you know, we could be thinking about this very differently if he just catches a pass that hit him in the hands in stride, which he probably takes for a long touchdown. But yeah, I think both are pretty interesting. Like if no one's going to play Chase again, I'm in. The price now is getting very close to Higgins 6,400, Chase 6,900. If the ownership is going to be on Higgins, you know, give me Chase.
It will be. I mean, yeah. T will definitely be, well, I don't know. The price is close enough. Maybe it's not, because their prices have started to converge as Chase has had worse results and T has had better results. And I mean, the problem is both of these teams want to run the ball. That's the problem with stacking this game, is that the Bengals actually want to be a run heavy team and the 49ers want to do everything they can to hide Jimmy Garoppolo. Like it's like all of Kittle's stuff last week. The first touchdown was actually a decent throw by Jimmy. And then the second one was all Kittle. I mean, Kittle, like he just weaved through, like it felt like the entire defense on his second touchdown.
Yeah, Kittle's awesome. I mean, I've been pro so Kittle. Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're just like, you're never going to be able to project the targets very high, and you're never going to project the efficiency to what it actually might be, because he's awesome. So, you know, I kind of, but your point about them hiding Garoppolo is so true. You know, they play pretty slow. Like, they're hiding him. They're trying to limit the offensive volume.
I mean, they've had multiple drives of like over 10 minutes this season.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's wild. I mean, it kind of reminds me a little bit of what Washington's doing right now, where like when they are passing, they're pretty efficient. Well, I mean, I don't even need the qualifier. They're very efficient. So, you know, it's a low volume thing, and it's going to hurt Cincinnati. I don't know that Cincinnati is truly committing to the run here. They've played a stretch of run funnels and they've played the matchups. And so they certainly are.
And Joe Burrow said, we want to establish it.
Yeah, he did say that. Yeah,
he did say.
But that. I also wonder if, like, maybe he's kind of having some fun. They're playing, you know, they're entering a game against the Chargers when, like, of course you want to establish it. They have the Raiders. Like, they've been playing these teams where you probably should shift to the run, and they did. San Francisco's not a run funnel. They're not like a pass funnel either, but they're not a run funnel if Burrow's healthy. And I think that's the key question here. What's the deal with his pinky?
Oh yeah, healthy, I forgot then, about that.
Yeah, which really, I mean, could put a damper on this game. He was clearly in pain, and it, you know, affects his grip on the ball and everything. So that definitely makes me a little bit more worried about playing this game.
So we are looking at like an all-time chalk convergence on Tampa Bay Buffalo in single entry stuff this week. Like it won't get that out of control in like the Millie Maker or whatever, but in single entry, like in the spy in the red zone and stuff, like there's going to be crazy ownerships on these Tampa Bay Buffalo players.
I think you're right. Are we done? Are we out of games?
We're out of games. The one I can see myself talking myself into is Dallas, Washington. That's where, you know, Dallas gets ahead and they still throw enough and those guys are efficient enough. They can get there without like 50 passing attempts. And then you got Bates, you got McLaurin, you got Gibson, like that one. And in, you know, divisional game, weird shit happens in divisional games.
Yeah. Dak doubles seem very attractive. The more we talk through it.
Yeah.
Dalton Schultz is probably not, he seems like a little pricey, but Cooper, Gallup, and Lamb are all like definitely in play at their price. So,
I mean, Cooper and Gallup are cheap. I mean, they're sub 6K. Like they are cheap. So that is pretty.
Yeah.
Nice.
Like imagine playing like Russell Gage over one of Amari
over
Cooper
Gallup.
Or Michael Gallup. Yeah. Yeah.
People will do it, buddy.
No, thank
They're
you.
Running to
no,
do
thank
it. yeah. All right. There we go. Let's get you out of here. What can people look forward to this week from ship chasing and from the walkthrough?
Yeah. Ship chasing we're doing tonight. We're, you know, heading into like the last waiver wire run of the year. So, you know, the time to, there's not really anyone to pick up this week. So it's a little anticlimactic.
No, it's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really gross. But, you know, we're also going to be talking a bit about the season overall and kind of lessons learned and stuff. And then, as always, I'll have the walkthrough out on Friday where I'll be doing a preview of every game, going through a lot of the stuff that I was talking about here, you know, pass rate over expected and, you know, taking a look at some of these defenses to see, like, if, you know, should we buy into the Chiefs defense, that recent trend? At this point of the season, I think a lot of it is, like,
maybe the that's the answer. Maybe the Chiefs with Renfro or Deshaun Jackson. Maybe that's the answer.
That's interesting. Renfro, I mean, he's getting his work, and that's
he's unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, there we go. Everyone, follow Pat Crane on Twitter. Watch Ship Chasing. Read the walkthrough, and we'll be back later in the week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.